I'm Bill Littlefield, and it's time for three stories you should know.
I might not be the best, but I'm the most fun.
That's Adam Rippon, who helped the U.S. win bronze in the team figure skating event in South Korea, and that's where we're going to start this week. I'm joined by WBUR Shira Springer and by Will Leach, senior writer for MLB.com. Welcome back to both of you.
Thanks.
Thank you, as always, sir.
Shira, you're up first.
Okay, I am declaring right now that Adam Rippon is the winner of the Winter Olympics. Why? Because he has won over fans and media members with his candor, really. I mean, he's been honest about what it's like to be an openly gay athlete. He's been honest about this crazy starvation diet he went on a couple years ago, where I think he was having two pieces of toast, six cups of coffee a day, and training on that. And he's just been honest about the whole experience. They asked him to do a play-by-play of his first skate on Olympic ice, and he admitted that for about the first 30 seconds, he felt like vomiting. We need more Olympic athletes like Rippon. They don't have to be as much of a showman, and they don't have to be as candid as Rippon has been about just about everything. But it would be nice to see them be themselves and not feel that pressure to be the Olympic athlete that either fans or sponsors or advertisers expect.
Will, are you similarly captivated by Adam Rippon?
Well, unlike Rippon, I am neither the best nor the most fun. So I can only speak from the outside. He's been so much like this is the fun of the Olympics, right? You know, I went to Sochi 4 years ago, which was much warmer, by the way, than South Korea appears to be. It looks horrible there. We went to the beach when we were in Sochi. And one of the most fun things about interviewing Winter Olympic athletes, as opposed to interviewing professional athletes here, is professional athletes, because they're interviewed all the time and every time they say something interesting, they usually get torn apart for it, are much more guarded. But the fun of me, the Winter Olympics, are people like him, where this is the spotlight. Once every 4 years, it comes on them, and they're ready for it and ready to embrace it as themselves. It's been a very exciting thing to say. I wish all athletes could be like that. I understand why they're not, but it's certainly something exciting thing to see.
One of the things I liked about Adam Rippon is he not only talked, Shira, as you said, about this crazy diet that he was on, he also acknowledged that he went to In-N-Out Burger and ate plenty of
when he didn't make the Olympics in 2014, right? He's sitting on the roof with Mariah Nagasa.
Absolutely. He had me when he said that he didn't want his Olympics to be about Mike Pence, because I don't want my Olympics to be about Mike Pence either. And now it's just going to be interesting to see if Mr. Rippon's taxes are audited or if he's delayed for a couple of days at the airport when he tries to come back to the U.S. And we'll all tune in for that, I suppose.
You know, when Adam had me, he had me when there were some haters out there and he decided to tweet, and I will do a sanitized version of his tweet, but he tweeted to the haters. He said, listen, the Glamazon is ready for the runway. And you got to love a guy with spirit like that.
Sticking with the Olympics, I want to say I'm glad that North Korea is represented at these games. I'm happy that the women's hockey team includes players from both Koreas. And I've heard criticism of the North Korean cheerleaders. Their presence is all about propaganda. I'm glad that they're there, too. They are disciplined and they are closely watched by their minders, but their presence reminds us that North Koreans are people. They're not cartoon villains. They're not cartoon victims. Their head of state is bizarre and dangerous. And there is a monstrous gap between the wealthy elite in that country and the mass of people who don't have enough to eat. But the case of the cheerleaders still. Yes, maybe they are spreading propaganda historically. That's one of the things that always happens at the Olympics. Will, are you with me on this, or would you like to have seen them stopped at the border?
Listen, we as Americans would never want to go out and talk about how we are different than our leader. Please know that we're different than our leader. So for me, I agree with you. The idea that there is personality there. And listen, this is a country that, you know, I am sympathetic to the idea that certainly I think to a lot of people that cheerleaders like this funny meme story. But what's actually going on in North Korea is so terrifying. Like, it's so rare that we get a moment where we get to see any of them. But for me, the fun of it is, yeah, they're human beings. They're silly. They're promoting their country in a way that is probably better than their country actually is, which, again, is what totally what what Americans are doing while they're over there.
Absolutely.
So I don't mean to make an equivalent between the two, but certainly I find it hard to look at that and be like, wow, that's a problem. I feel like the problem goes beyond just outside that.
So I am mostly with you. I like the idea that you have these cheerleaders out there that humanize North Korea in a different way than their leader. But I also think, and I know this from covering five Olympics, that when you are on site at the Olympics, reporters have some responsibility to get beyond the propaganda. So I would hope that the major news outlets that are there covering the Olympics do stories, and they are doing stories, about the politics on the Korean Peninsula. And I think that's a must, whether you're in Sochi and you're talking about Putin's politics, or in Rio, another case of economic disparity there, and, you know, the favelas. I think, yes, it's great to have those cheerleaders present, but the media has to be there and report on all that goes on with the Olympics.
Will, you are last and certainly never least.
I'm always least, Bill, but thank you. So I'm going to make a switch from the Olympics over to the NBA. I have a column in the next issue of New York Magazine about how one of the glories of the NBA this year is this is a league that's all about beef and drama, and players are always fighting. Remember, baseball is a sport where if you are happy, you are supposed to cover your face with your glove so nobody actually lets you express yourself. It's actually like standard practice to do that. And in football, they cover themselves with a helmet. I love the NBA, particularly because A, they've embraced the individualism of the players, but B, they've embraced beefs. It's like a Real Housewives episode. The subplots are all about who's feuding with who. Sometimes it's players on different teams feuding with one another. I loved when Enes Kanter called a Suns player, said he had that retirement body. Like, that's just kind of a great thing to say about another player. And players on the own team are fighting with each other. The big story of this last month of the season has been the Cleveland Cavaliers all fighting with each other to the point that they all had to trade half the team just to make sure people were getting along. There aren't punches thrown. It's all generally harmless. For me, this is something that has added an extra fun subplot to the NBA season. It kind of needs it because, frankly, looks like it's going to be Cavaliers and Warriors again in the NBA Finals. It's just fun for me to see that half of the enjoyment people get out of NBA games is, oh man, that was a burn. That was a total burn. He's going to be so upset. It's reality television on NBA. I think it's wonderful.
Shira, are you likewise fascinated by the peripheral action going on around the NBA?
Oh, I'm in complete agreement and loving every minute of this ongoing season-long soap opera. This, by the way, is sort of, to me, the Cult of Personality edition of Three Stories. And, you know, I know, Bill, you said it's sort of a peripheral thing, but it actually does affect the play. I mean, you have a guy like Russell Westbrook who gets mad and then goes out and scores 46 points.
Well, I'm going to have to take your word for all of this, and what fun I'm going to get to disagree, because I acknowledge it. I watch basketball for the, you know, the good play, the dunking, the long shots.
But you can have that, too, with your soap opera.
And the problem is that I'm mostly speaking out of ignorance, because I have to acknowledge I've never watched an episode of Real Housewives. So I have no context for what you're saying. So I'm going to stick with the basketball. I enjoy it. It seems to me that's enough. But if the rest of you and everybody listening is enjoying all this soap opera stuff, terrific. Have a good time with it. Right, Will?
Yeah, to me, I love – Shira's exactly right, the idea that it is actually going on the court. The idea that Westbrook wants to have a great game because someone insulted him. So just keep that in mind, Bill. The next time that we come on, just right before we go on, just be like, Will, you got no radio game. You got no radio game, and I'm going to bring it. And I'm going to bring it. I'm going to show you. I'm going to posterize you, as is the parlance in NBA.
My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been WBUR Shira Springer. She also contributes to the Boston Globe, and MLB.com's Will Leach. He hosts The Will Leach Show on Sports Illustrated TV. Thank you, both of you.
Thanks for having me.
An honor, as always.